Welcome back to Edge Show number 104. I'm Simon Perryman.
Hey, I'm Rick Claus. Back from a busy
super
week.
Busy.
It's good to see you got your voice back.
Mine is
still almost back, not quite, but almost there.
It was pretty rough. I mean, you had what, dozens of interviews and other events? I had about 14 sessions.
You were session master. I was Channel 9 live stage host and session master there as well. It was, let's just say, TechEd once again lived up to the whole fact of being a summer camp for IT geeks. It was fantastic.
Sounds about right.
It was a lot of fun. Lots of good stuff. Go see all the content available on channel9.msdn.com under events for TechEd North America, obviously. But we're here for 104, man. And it's still action-packed and lots of stuff to catch up on.
Well, a lot of them are the announcements we made last week at TechEd. And we're going to really just focus on the key Azure ones here.
Yep.
So why don't you kick it off? Tell us about storage.
Well, yeah, you know, there's a couple new things that came out with storage. I don't know if you missed this one during the keynote or what. I know that Mark Rusinovich talked about it during the post-keynote interview that I did with Joey Snow on Channel 9 live stream, was the ability to do SMB sharing between VMs, sort of like an SMB file server as a platform as a service type play, as opposed to having to spin up a specific Azure VM just for the purposes of being able to have one central storage space for all your VMs on that net. Instead, you can now have a service they can go off and use to. Practical applications of this is being able to have a centralized spot for your debug logs or for files between different servers. It's just a great and easy way to set that one up. The other part that came up really big with storage was the ability to import and export. I mean, you know that we've been able to do this for a while now because they're just VHD files that are blobs. But what about a customer that has tens of terabytes or hundreds of terabytes worth of data they want to actually crunch?
Like a new project they're onboarding.
It used to be that people on our team at the Enterprise Evangelism team with the, I guess we're called DX now, not DPE.
That's right.
You used to be able to engage with evangelists and connections there if you were an ISV or a partner and then could work out an arrangement to get stuff done, to get data brought up there. Now it's officially a streamlined process. You can actually go through, get your media and your data put onto external devices and then have those securely transported to Microsoft Azure, it's Microsoft Azure, not Windows Azure anymore.
That's right.
Microsoft Azure specific points and then have it loaded up inside your environment on a scheduled basis. So new way to import your data up, but also exporting your data back out again if you need to as well. Not just through doing your own hybrid connectivity solution, but now you can do vast amounts of data and bandwidth going through. Like I say, there's nothing more than having more bandwidth than a station wagon full of terabyte drives.
Nice. So next key topic was around networking. In fact, five new announcements around networking. The first is the general availability of ExpressRoute. And ExpressRoute basically allows you to have a secure and fast connection between your own data center and Microsoft Azure by going through your ISV, your internet service provider. Mm-hmm. So right now, we already have existing partnerships with several ISVs, including some of the big ones in the States, like AT&T, Verizon. But we've recently announced new partnerships with several others as well. So think of this as essentially this private network between your data center to your ISP over to Microsoft Azure. So better security, faster transfer time, a lot of other benefits. The next enhancement we made is having multiple site-to-site VPN connections. And this is one of the most popular topics here. We had these large customers, multiple data centers, and they wanted VPN to all of those data centers, accessing a single endpoint up in Windows Azure. So that's now available, that's now supported. We then went further and also added VNet to VNet connectivity. So if you have your services running across multiple Azure data centers, whether that's US East, US West, Europe, Asia, you can now create dedicated virtual networks that span those multiple Azure data centers. Fourth, we started to add more reservation options around dedicated IP addresses. So if you have a public cloud service that you're spinning up multiple times and you want to maintain a persistent IP address, you can now do that. And in fact, five of them are available for free out of the box. Mm-hmm. So assuming you have that many IP addresses, you can start using them as kind of fixed for a particular service. Last but not least is internal load balancing. So if you have multiple IP addresses or multiple virtual machines within the Azure data center that are redundant, we could do load balancing across that tier. But important to note, this is only available for our internal IP addresses that are running on internal virtual networks at this time.
Mm-hmm. I've got one here for remote app capabilities that are extended now. Basically, you're able to go off and, like you would do a remote app publishing within your own organization off your own RDS type services, remote desktop services, you can now actually have one of those created for you up inside your subscription, and then publish your apps on that particular platform and then make them available to your individual customers on a variety of form factors, be them on iOS, Android, or Windows PC kind of thing. So basically, it's available right now in preview mode. Currently, it's free because it is preview mode. Obviously, they're going to figure out nice moderate levels of being able to do billing and able to do configuration as well. So for now, as long as you have a subscription to Azure, you can go into the preview portal and go ahead and sign up for that particular remote app preview.
Excellent. Well, the next big enhancement is going to be something that really helps our partners, and that is improved API management. So let's say you're building an application that runs up on Azure. Let's say it does something like gives you the current exchange rate, just something simple like that. Well, what we found with a lot of our customers is they just have different ways that they're managing that. And so what we wanted to do was kind of offer a single, standardized, centralized portal that allows you to publish your APIs, test them, provide documentation, and basically provide a consistent experience for anybody using Azure, regardless of your own company, and how you go and actually deploy and manage those APIs. So definitely one of the bigger and more popular enhancements from our partners, really going to help us expand our ecosystem here.
From a slightly developer angle, because obviously Azure's got some very good developer capabilities in there, that's where it kind of got its own start from, is the ability to now use a new Redis cache service, if you're interested. Basically it's an open source caching algorithm that Microsoft is now able to provide and use and provide in a managed service. And basically you have either a basic or a standard, either a single node or a replicated node between two different sites that can be set up in either a 250 megabyte or 1 gigabyte in size. And for now, it's currently free, but you have a limit of two that you can create for your individual subscription. And you basically go ahead in the preview portal, you initialize it, you make it available, you identify your cache and your size, and then basically add that different piece of code into your different applications to be able to leverage this. Again, this provides faster and more readily available content to be served up for your apps down to your own internal applications and make them available to your customers. And it's available now. It's a pretty big thing, changing our caching engine to be able to use this.
Very cool. Well, one of the other announcements as well we have is new enhancements around our hybrid connectivity. And really, this is just to kind of focus on what this exactly is. We're basically offering a free tier of BizTalk server. And BizTalk provides capabilities of integration across different systems, whether that's on-premise, mobile, ticketing, other types of business processes. And so essentially, by spinning up this BizTalk hybrid connection service up in Azure, we're allowing that to basically be a segue and allow you to connect your on-premise services up with any Azure services via this BizTalk hybrid connection.
If you're an EA customer and you wanted to go off and to make purchases in the store for various different gallery apps and gallery capabilities, now you're able to actually use your EA benefits as, think of it like a credit card or a PO, if you will. So instead of having to worry about cracking out the credit card or go for a different type of billing, you can just simply use your EA and charge against your EA for a bunch of different types of subscriptions, like for instance MongoLab for a larger database for FreeSQL or NoSQL, MongoDB in preview mode, or phone number validation wizards, that sort of stuff. A whole bunch of different apps and add-ons you can now add in and charge directly to your EA. So that's new and available, and available now.
And one of the final sets of enhancements we have around our virtual machines themselves. So we introduced built-in virtual machine antivirus now. So when you actually go and deploy a new virtual machine up in Azure, you have the choice of using Microsoft Security and Antivirus, Symantec, or Trend Micro. You can pre-install those agents so that those particular VMs are protected while they're up and running. Last but not least for our virtual machines, we wanted to go and add better support for capturing images. Now, we've been able to capture a traditional virtual machine for a while, but there's a lot of complexity if your virtual machine has multiple data drives. So we wanted to really simplify how we can do this, providing the ability to capture the single VM, multiple drives, or the entire set. And also get better visibility in how you can actually store and recover them, because now once these images are actually captured, they will, at that point onwards, appear under your My Images workspace. Mm-hmm. So you can reuse them, redeploy them. So if you want to spin up different instances as you're doing development tests, using this checkpoint technology, it can hopefully save you some time through that development cycle.
I like to try to equate that one up to the snapshot capability that's on-premises and local with Hyper-V. I mean, in the past, when you're doing images or when you're in captures with Azure, it always would go through a sysprep, generalization process, therefore you'd lose your data disks and lose your other stuff. Now it's simply one line of command, one line of PowerShell code to be able to capture the image as it is at that date and time. It's not meant for deployment, it's meant for being able to go back in time and do different things. So very cool technology, we made that available now. I remember seeing that in Rusinovich did a session that talked about that one there, so quite good stuff.
Great,
quite good
well,
stuff altogether.
We're now gonna transition over to our interview, and since we started talking about VMs in Azure, we wanted to be consistent here, and we're gonna bring on Matt McSpirit to talk about the Microsoft Virtual Machine Converter. This allows us to move VMware virtual machines either to Hyper-V or even all the way up to Windows Azure. So let's go ahead and check that out. And welcome back to the Edge Show. Today I'm joined by Matt McSpirit, and we're going to be talking about one of our most recent out-of-band releases, the MVMC, or Microsoft Virtual Machine Converter. First, Matt, give us a quick intro.
Well, thank you. Hello, welcome back. My name is Matt McSpirit. I'm one of our technical product marketing managers based in Redmond with a focus on Windows Server and System Center, along with, in this case, VMware migration tools.
Nice. So first of all, the MVMC, it's in its second release, but just give us a quick overview. What does this tool do?
Yep, so the MVMC, it released a few years back originally, and is a tool to help you convert your VMware workloads into Hyper-V workloads.
Now, with this release, we've gone one step further, because we're not just going VMware over to Hyper-V, we're also going VMware to Azure, right?
Yeah, correct. That was one of the new capabilities brought in version 2, which has just been released in the last couple of months. So we're enabling you to convert those VMware virtual machines to Hyper-V and to Azure if you see fit as well.
Now, a lot of people, they say, yes, I want to migrate to Hyper-V, but they're afraid of kind of the cost of a lot of these different migration tools and stuff. What's the license with this?
The license is very friendly on the wallet. It's free to download, so you can download, test, play with it in your own environments. And there's a couple of other tools on the market as well that are also available to help you migrate, but this offers you a very simple solution to enable migration from A, VMware, to B or C, Hyper-V or Azure.
Nice, nice. So it's free, it's available, and we'll be posting the links to it at the bottom of this page as well. So what is the difference between the version 1 and now version 2 that we've just released?
Yep. So as I said before, version 1 shipped a couple of years back, and at the time supported the latest VMware releases and the currently available versions of Hyper-V and guest operating systems. But aside from the conversion now to Azure that's been introduced in version 2, there's also a native PowerShell API, whereas previously there wasn't. So for people wanting to automate some of the key tasks, we published the documentation, the commandlets, and all of that cool stuff to enable you to automate some of the tasks you see through the UI. But one of the other key changes within this most recent release is support for all of the latest stuff, being on the VMware side, on the Hyper-V side, also support for Azure and guest operating systems.
Nice. Well, let's go through the list. So on the Hyper-V side, what hosts can we support as our destinations?
Yep. So as the destinations, you can convert your VMware virtual machines to Hyper-V running as part of Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1 and 2012 or 2012 R2.
Now, is there a file format difference if we're migrating to a 2012 R2 host?
Yes, so back in 2012, we introduced a new capability, a new virtual hard disk format called VHDX. Bigger capacity, optimized performance and alignment, and it's a choice you make at deployment, VHD or VHDX. Now, if you're converting to a 2008 R2 SP1 host, you won't have that choice. You can only convert into VHD format. If you're going to 2012 or 2012 R2, you can choose in the wizard, as we'll see later, VHD or VHDX.
Nice. But now, if somebody moves today and they move to a 2008 R2 host VHD, isn't there an inbox tool that they can also use to switch between VHD to VHDX if they need as well?
Yep, within 2012 R2, you can do the VM disk conversion.
Okay, so pretty straightforward. Yeah. It's not like they're going to be locked in if they do this.
No, you can go either way as well. So you can go VHD to VHDX and back and forward. If you go to VHDX and then increase the size beyond the 2 terabyte limit, which was VHD specific, then that's not going to work.
Okay, good clarify. Well, let's speak about the VM side now. As far as our source source virtualization host, what can we support on the VMware side?
So on the VMware side, from a vSphere host perspective, and it can be a standalone ESXi host, or it can be one managed by vCenter. We will query either, so it's up to you. We support 4.1, 5.1, 5.5, 5.5 being the latest, on both the ESX, ESXi side, and the vCenter side. So pretty good coverage for the last few years, at least, from a vSphere host perspective.
Nice. Now, what about the guest operating systems running within the VMs? What different versions can we run from Windows, Windows Client? We do Linux distributions now, right?
Yeah, that was another new thing in the version 2. So version 1 of MVMC didn't support any Linux guests. Version 2 does bring in support for some Linux guests, such as Red Hat, Ubuntu, SUSE Linux, Debian, Oracle, CentOS as well. So there's a good selection of Hyper-V supported distributions there that you can run within that Hyper-V environment. But from a Windows side, you've got not only Windows servers from 2008 through to 2012 and 2012 R2, x86 or x64. 2008 R2 SP1 was the last, was the first 64-bit only Windows server that we shipped. And then you've got Windows clients as well, back to Vista if you want to convert there, and through to 8.1. So there's a good selection, but the key thing to remember is if you're going to go and convert through to Azure, they don't support client OSs nor x86. So they won't be suitable for conversion up into Azure.
All right,
but for Hyper-V, they'd be fine.
Now, do the VMs themselves over on the source in VMware world, do they actually need to be running?
They can be running or they can be off. It's up to you. Either way, when the conversion takes place, we're going to be removing VMware tools if they're online, so extracting that, because you're not going to need those when they're in the Hyper-V environment. So we'll extract those and then bring it across to Hyper-V. So that's a key part. So online if you want, or you can do an offline conversion.
Now, are we also adding the integration components as well?
Yep, where applicable. Yeah, so when that virtual machine comes across, onto the target Hyper-V host, we'll be installing the relevant integration components, which is our optimized drivers to run that particular OS on that particular Hyper-V platform.
And just to clarify, there will be some downtime, right? We can't do a live migration or a vMotion conversion.
No, as much as that would be magical, that's not something that exists today. No, there's downtime involved. We're part of the conversion, we're snapshotting the VM to give you at least a clean backup if something does go wrong, so you can go back to a clean slate. But then we're copying that virtual disk across the wire, and that may take a substantial amount of time. The VM can stay running at that point, but don't forget what we copied originally might now be out of date. But there's the downtime of the VM can vary. It depends on the conversion tool, but with MVMC, it might only be relatively small. It's just the delta between bringing that VM up and the time you took the snapshot could be larger, which for a very active VM or active OS, you may experience data loss there. So we want to make sure that you're providing, that you're taking that into account and maybe do an offline conversion for that particular workload that's very busy.
But now this could be good for almost like a testing scenario, right? You don't want to take down your production VM. You just want to test how successful this migration
Correct.
Will be. So you could use it in this case.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, that workload can stay running. The snapshot, we trigger VMware's own tools to take the snapshot. So it's clean, it's how they intended. And then we work with that snapshot copy. You know, and the primary VM stays online, so users can access, do what they need to do. Then you can bring it up on the Hyper-V side and just see if it meets the needs that you're looking for. So it's pretty flexible and really, really easy.
Okay, so as we kind of decompose what is included in a virtual machine, we have our virtual hard disk,
yep.
We have our networks, and we have the configuration file, which is kind of like the metadata that defines the information. And then we have our running in-state memory, of course.
Yep.
So let's kind of break down those different parts and say, first, the virtual hard disk. How do we go from a VMDK file over to a VHD or VHDX?
So that's what MVMC is doing fundamentally, and that's what takes the longest time of the whole conversion process. Because if you've got an incredibly large VMDK on your VMware file system, VMFS, we've got to get it across to the conversion machine, which takes time. So there's a copy process there. And we place that into almost like a scratch area where we have the original disk that we've just brought over, and we're copying the blocks from inside that into a new VHD or VHDX file. So you're effectively going to need double the space on your conversion machine, whether that is your Hyper-V host or whether it's just a designated conversion machine that you're using. So you'll need the double space. We're converting, we're copying the blocks, and we're also validating to make sure everything's working okay. And then it will move on to its final destination, which might be on the SAN or wherever you're storing your Hyper-V virtual disks to finish with.
So does this mean that if I have a VMDK file that's 10 gigabytes, that would in theory take longer than one that's only 5 gigabytes?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so some of the time will vary based on how much of that data we're actually copying.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, now what happens to the in-state memory? If we have the virtual machine that's actively running on our ESXi host, what do we do to that in-state memory?
So the virtual machine that stays running on the host, as we said before, if that's an online VM, it stays running. Don't forget, we're taking a snapshot of the virtual disk and the VM at that point, and any in-stateness is lost that's not been written to disk. Because we bring it up, we attach it to a new Hyper-V VM, and we start it up from that side. So the running state would only be maintained if it was a live migration.
Okay.
But in any migration tool, there's always going to be an element of downtime where the crossover takes place, so from VMware onto Hyper-V.
Now, what about the virtual networks? You know, we have private networks, we have external networks. How do we basically do remapping from our ESXi hosts after we move them over to Hyper-V?
Yep, so your MVMC will work with you to actually migrate those networks across. What it won't do is it take the static IP addresses across. So if you have statically assigned your IP addresses to your virtual machines, that's something MVMC doesn't correct for you or introduce into the Hyper-V VM, but we will talk about a solution that can help with that a bit later on.
Okay. Now, what about the metadata? And by metadata, I basically mean, in our world, the configuration file. Like, you define the memory, dynamic memory, things like that. How do we update that metadata between the VMs?
So MVMC will look at your config from your VMware VM, and it will try and match it as close as it can to
so it just
in.
Really does a mapping again from
as close as it can
to the second.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Now, what about the actual user information that's running within that VM, such as, you know, Active Directory, secure accounts, logon accounts? Do we need to have any special considerations with security privileges during this process?
For the purpose of the conversion, MVMC really just needs administrative privilege on that particular VM. So as long as it's got the accounts that it needs to be able to interrogate and communicate and work with VMware tools, and because we need to uninstall the VMware tools, so that's something that's an administrative privilege inside the VM, so we need an appropriate account to work with WMI and some of the other interfaces to get the information it needs to start that conversion. But beyond that, there's no real change to your security setup. It just needs an account that's got enough privilege to work effectively.
Now, will it also support migration to what we call Generation 2 virtual machines, the new type of VM in our latest release?
Yep, so not in this release, no. In MVMC 2, we will convert to a Generation 1 virtual machine, because that's most synonymous with, I guess, what VMware provide in their platform. But if you want to migrate to Generation 2 from there, then I believe there's tools available that you may have talked about. So.
There is. There's actually a free tool that you can download from the TechNet Gallery. We'll include a link to that. It's a Generation 1 to Generation 2 converter. So we basically do a two-step progress.
Yep.
VMware to Hyper-V, Gen 1 over to Gen 2.
If you wanted to go to Gen 2, that's right, yeah. But for Gen 1, that will meet most of your needs, yeah.
Okay. So about how long does a migration take, and what are some of the factors that could influence the duration?
So the biggest factor that, and let's not confuse migration with conversion. Migration, the actual flip over time from what a user has experienced on the primary source VM to now running on Hyper-V might actually only be quite a small window.
Yeah.
But from initial snapshot time on the VMware side through to disk conversion, which takes ultimately the longest time, we're copying that big 40 gig file from vSphere host data stores onto the conversion machine, that takes time. We're converting the disk, that takes time. And then we're potentially moving that to the target Hyper-V host storage area, which might be on a SAN, that takes time. So all of those interim pieces may take a decent amount of time. For a 40 gig VM, it may take half an hour, it may take slightly longer, it may be less, depending on the disk you're using, the underlying SSDs, the hard disk drives, whatever it may be, and your network speed. But that actual flick over time that the user notices from primary going down to coming back online on the Hyper-V side might actually only be a couple of minutes. So
nice.
It's something that you can structure and organize around your maintenance windows for sure.
Okay. Well, let's move on and talk a little more about Azure migration now. Mm-hmm. So give me the high level overview. What happens when we go from VMware to Azure?
So the wizard is essentially incredibly similar. So all you're doing is essentially choosing Azure as the target location, which remove some of the options you may have had in the Hyper-V wizard. So for instance, you can't choose VHDX.
That will automatically be scoped out for you during the wizard.
Yeah,
okay.
So it's going to scope it down to specifically Azure-focused selections. It's not going to automatically start the VM on Azure, which you can do on Hyper-V, as we'll see through the wizard. And what's going to happen is it's going to do all of that conversion on the local environment, so on your conversion machine in the little scratch environment we talked about earlier. And then it's going to orchestrate the conversion, the copying process from on-premises up into Azure, into your storage account. And that, again, will add additional time to your migration process, because you're networked up to Azure. It may be fast, it may be slow. So it's going to push it up there. And that's where it's going to finish. It's going to finish with a virtual disk in Azure, but it's not going to go ahead and create the VM at this point in time. It's just going to leave that virtual disk. So there's an extra step that you may want to automate with PowerShell, or you may want to do manually.
Okay. Well, you bring it up. Let's talk a little more about automation. You know, I might have 100 VMs I want to migrate, not necessarily go through a wizard. Mm-hmm. How can we speed this up? What type of API, is there other APIs that we can use here?
Yep, so MVMC has a PowerShell, a native PowerShell API that you can use, and we publish the commandlets, so you can write your own automation to enable you to really accelerate these conversions and, with a script, or integrate it with your existing automation solutions if you've got one.
Now, what about the Matt toolkit? Is that something else we could use here?
Yep, so instead of doing it yourself, you could just let us help you. So the Matt, which I had no impact in.
He did partially
name
it.
Well, only one T. So the Migration Automation Toolkit is essentially a series of PowerShell scripts that enables you to quickly build up an automated solution without additional tools like System Center or third-party tools, literally just wrappering MVMC's engine of conversion with these PowerShell scripts and a SQL database, a SQL server, whether it's SQL Express, which is free, or if you've got an existing investment in SQL. And all that's happening with Matt is essentially it will go out and query the vCenter or the ESXi for your list of VMs, and it will bring that back to your environment, to essentially a Notepad list. And so we're really utilizing some of the inbox tools here. So you'll have a Notepad list, and you essentially customize that list of VMs based in batches. So you may say, you know what, I'd like to do 10 at this point. And so you define your list as 10. That feeds into the SQL database, and then MVMC works through that list one by one converting. So you just go, and off it goes. However, if you've only got one conversion engine, you're still only going to be converting one, maybe two or three at a time, which is going to take a long time. So what Matt also supports is almost like a distributed compute model, where you can put MVMCs, the .exe file, which is only 2.5 meg, it's a tiny file, place that on other conversion nodes, so we'll call them helper nodes, and tell the Matt where these are. So the more conversion nodes you have, the more conversions you can do simultaneously. So you can almost have like a farm of helper nodes, if you will, and the controller node, which is also doing conversions itself, is just farming out these jobs. And so the bigger your batch list, the more it's going to get through.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's a pretty cool way, and it's the beauty of the Matt tool is it's being community driven. So when people find new stuff, oh, that didn't work in my environment, they're feeding it back in. And we're seeing more and more partners embrace that as well. So for instance, NetApp have written a customized version specific to their filer so that you can utilize, if you've got NetApp storage, what we're calling Project Shift, which enables you to convert the virtual disks at the file system level on the NetApp filer incredibly quickly. You know, we're talking, in the demonstration we did recently at TechEd, it was a 1.5 terabyte of virtual disks to convert, and the whole process was done in 6 minutes, and the VMs were started up and ready to go.
Impressive.
That's phenomenally fast. But they're utilizing the Matt PowerShell capabilities to really scale their conversion solution rather than write something from scratch. DoubleTaker, another example of somebody else who's using that to scale out their conversion tool. So it's really starting to build and snowball as a conversion add-on, if you will.
Great. Well, can we see it in action?
We can see the MVMC in action, absolutely. Sure. I'll show you some of the GUI-driven stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So what we've got on the screen here, I'm in my environment, and I've got the Microsoft Virtual Machine Converter. And this, as I said, it's a 2.5 meg download, quick install. And then you start to be able to populate this wizard with information that's relevant to your environment. So if I go next, you'll see the first thing I've got to choose is whether I'm going to migrate a VM to Hyper-V or to Azure. And we'll go through the Azure one second, but I'm going to go through the Hyper-V one first. And all it's going to ask me, and you'll see a couple of things that it needs. You must need remote access through WMI on the Hyper-V destination, so the end target for this virtual machine. So we'll go next, and I'll give it the Hyper-V address. So I'm going to choose MVMC host 01. I can use my Windows creds or whatever other credentials are appropriate for me. And let's click next. Hopefully that's going to go, yep, there we go. It's gone ahead and that's authenticated. If you've put the wrong credentials or the host isn't valid, it would error out at that point. Now we get to choose where I'm going to store the converted hard disks. And I'm just going to choose a UNC share that I'm going to place these particular virtual hard disks. And you'll see this is where we were talking before about those virtual disk options. Not only do I choose VHD or VHDX, but also do I want fixed, i.e. if this is a 40 gig virtual hard disk, the guest OS sees 40 gig and it will consume 40 gig of physical space. Alternatively, if it's dynamic, it's a 40 gig VHDX. It's the guest sees 40 gig, but the size on physical disk may only be 10 gig, depending on what the guest OS is consuming. So that's the difference between dynamic and fixed. We'll go next. Now I specify the information I need to connect to vCenter or ESXi directly. Contoso.lab and give it some credentials. Got the longest password in the world. There we go. And so the check was really quick. It's in our local environment, so it's a relatively fast environment. But what you'll see is I've got a number of virtual machines listed for conversion. Now I'm going to choose number 3 here. They're all the same. They're all 2012 R2 in this case. But remember, as we said earlier, they could be Linux. They could be further older versions of Windows Server and even Windows Client as well. And you'll notice they're all currently on at this point. So I'll go next. And it's populated this information. I can use my Windows account. Now, the final state of the source VM. Do you want MVMC to shut down that VM after this process is finished and then bring it up on the second site automatically or on the Hyper-V environment? So I'll choose which one I want, off or on. And you probably wouldn't want on and on because then they are technically identical. So that's probably not what you'd want. But we'll go next. Credentials are fine. Folder where we're going to store, we're going to workspace, where we're going to handle all the conversion while this is happening. So you're going to need a decent amount of space there. Double, essentially, what we've got for the VMDK coming over and the VHD or VHDX that we're creating. We'll go next. Everything looks like it's good to go. So now we can click finish. And we'll leave that, hopefully, to start. Now, it's a 10 gig VM, so it's probably going to take about 15 minutes, maybe.
All right.
So it's unlikely we're going to see the end. But while that's happening, we'll minimize that. And I'll go to my other MVMC that I've got running here, which is this one. And I've pre-populated some of the data in this one, just in the essence of time, and also the wizard is practically identical to the one we've just been through. But this time I'm going to choose Azure. And you'll see by clicking Next, I enter some information around the subscription and thumbprint, which I get from the Azure portal. And we've blurred that out just because this is personal information to me. But once you've got that and successfully configured your certificates, what you'll find is that it will automatically link to your storage account or accounts, depending on how many you've got in Azure. We just got the one. And then at this point, we're doing the same kind of thing we did before. So where's vCenter? Which VM do you want to convert? I'm not going to convert the same one I've just selected to convert. I'll choose 001 this time. Give it a connection to that VM. Notice I can't turn on that VM in this one when it goes to Azure. The final state is off because all we're pushing up to Azure is the virtual disk itself. We're not doing that final step of conversion, of creation of the virtual machine when it gets there. So we'll go next. Again, same kind of workspace folder. Remember, you've got enough disk space. We'll go next, and that's it, and finish. Now, one thing you'll have noticed throughout that wizard is essentially the fact that we are only doing one VM at a time through the UI. If you want to do multiple, you want to scale this out, that's where the migration automation toolkit comes in. And that, in a nutshell, you can see some of the steps that are happening. So it's snapshotting on the VMware side. It's then going to uninstall the VMware tools. That's why we need some of the credentials that we talked about before. Then it's going to do the disk conversion, the VMDK into the VHD in this case, or the VHDX in the previous wizard. We'll restore the snapshot back on the VMware side so they're left with a clean, nice copy that they had before, just in case they weren't happy with the final result or they wanted to roll back. We'll do the analysis of the disk, make sure everything's validated and optimal, and then we'll finish that copy process to the final location where the Hyper-V VM will be created, which if it's on-premises, will be a Hyper-V host. If it's in Azure, we'll copy the disk up to up to Azure, essentially. If we look and compare that with the Hyper-V process, you'll see it's still taking the snapshots, but there's an extra step of provisioning the Hyper-V guest, which is what you said before about creating the config file of the VM. So that's what happens. And that, in a nutshell, is MVMC. It's incredibly easy, small to download, but can be scaled out through PowerShell. So it's powerful stuff.
Very straightforward. That was great. Well, where could people go to learn more about this?
So they can go to the download center, so they can download the MVMC there, and it comes with a pretty full guide, a documentation, and the accompanying PowerShell commandlets as well. So everything's contained in there, including all the guest OS support, the host support, instructions on how to get your certificates configured for Azure, and all of that stuff is contained. So that's probably the best place to go. And there was a TechEd session on the conversion options in general as well that you can also check out if you want to hear more about it and some of the other tools that are available as well.
Great, and we'll include those links at the bottom of this page. Well, Matt, thanks for joining me again. Really appreciate it. Great demo, great utility. Hopefully this will help a lot of our customers out there with that journey over to Hyper-V. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks.
Welcome back. Well, I hope you learned a little bit about how we can transition from our VMware to Hyper-V or even up to Windows Azure. If you have any questions about this, want to learn more about our technologies, or give us any feedback, please post your comments at the bottom of this page or hit us up on Twitter.
Yeah, you can reach us at @TNEdge, and we follow that one there to be able to respond back to you as soon as we can. I'm RicksterCDN, if you want to get a hold of me directly.
@SimonPerryman.
And you can also catch us on the Facebook page. I was going to say, I don't remember the URL exactly, but it's in the post. I think it's facebook.com/TheEdge Show.
Scroll down and you'll find it.
Yes, scroll down and find the right link. But hey, thanks for joining us for episode 104. It's been fun. We'll see you next time.